headlines. Russia censures the United States for threatening a diplomatic escalation with Iran and the IAEA, saying, quote, it's not helpful. Tensions growing between Moscow and NATO. The alliance warns if Russia uses force against Ukraine, it will have costs and consequences. And the world reacts to a heavily mutated variant of COVID-19 discovered in South Africa, imposing travel bans to curb its spread. Hello, welcome to your World News. Come to you live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you for joining us. Well, our top story this hour, Russia criticizes the United States for threatening Iran ahead of the key talks in Vienna on parties' obligations under the 2015 nuclear deal.
The U.S. did not negotiate with the Iranians for a very long time and forgot that Iranians don't do anything under pressure. If they're under pressure, they resist.
Mikhail Ulyanov says Washington's stance against Iran is unhelpful and unwelcome. It comes after the U.S. warned it would confront Iran at the International Atomic Energy Agency over the country's alleged refusal to cooperate with the watchdog. Signatories to the nuclear deal are set to meet on Monday for the seventh round of their talks after a five-month break. Tehran says the negotiations will be focused on the removal of anti-Iran sanctions. The U.S. imposed the bans on Iran after pulling out of the accord in 2018. Political commentator Saeed Khan says Washington has lost its international credibility after its withdrawal from the 2015 nuclear deal.
Not only the Biden administration, but the United States itself has certainly suffered quite a bit when it comes to geopolitical credibility. And we certainly saw this with the Trump administration and some of the rather drastic plans that occurred during that administration, including, if you recall, the U.S. withdrawal from the agreement, the JCPOA, which it had so strenuously tried to advocate to have enacted. That is going to create a credibility deficit for the United States moving forward when it comes to not only its allies, but its purported adversaries. To think now that whether the United States, even if they were to be able to cobble together an agreement, whether it would be willing to honor that with a future or subsequent administration. The idea that American foreign policy has become so politicized from one administration to the other is something that doesn't go unnoticed by other countries around the world. And when it comes to this idea then about whether this is really a bilateral agreement, de facto or otherwise, between the United States and Iran, I think that that illusion has now been shattered. And the idea that Russia and China now can leverage themselves in a much more forceful way to push back, and even as we've seen in the case of the Russian ambassador to the IAEA, calling the United States on what it sees as its inconsistencies, contradictions, and maybe even hypocrisies.
Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah says its listing as a terrorist organization will not affect the group's resolve and determination to resist. Hezbollah's Secretary General says the move by Australia is rooted in regional issues and is aimed against Lebanon's upcoming parliamentary elections. Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah added that some regional countries also moved to normalize ties with Israel to put pressure on the backers of the resistance movement. Nasrallah stressed that Hezbollah will continue to resist as long as the Israeli regime threatens Lebanon. On Wednesday, Australia expanded a pre-existing ban on the movement's armed units to the entire movement. Our correspondent in Beirut, Mariam Saleh, joined us earlier with details on the Hezbollah chief's remarks.
Zayed Nasrallah spoke in general about the fact that these resistance movements are being targeted nowadays, especially Hezbollah, because we're coming closer to parliamentary elections. This could impact Lebanese supporters. This could impact Lebanese voters, especially those who are expats. And they are, of course, allowed to go to their embassies and vote. This could probably intimidate those people in those countries. And Sayyid Nasrallah, however, he said that this will not impact the resistance movement and its resolve, its determination, its strength, and even the supportive ground of the resistance. peace. And despite the fact that the expatriates could probably be put under pressure not to go perhaps to the embassies and vote because they would be under scrutiny, however, with the fact that the Hezbollah does have strong support in Lebanon, this will assist the group, of course, in attaining the necessary votes. Well, definitely, if you say, for example, the entire Hezbollah as a movement, as a political group in Lebanon is being sanctioned, this could impact even diplomatic ties with the Lebanese government itself, because Hezbollah has members, has seats in the Lebanese parliament. They have even members in the Lebanese cabinet that are considered related or linked to Hezbollah as a political group. And this is why this basically complicates those diplomatic issues.
The Saudi-led coalition has carried out fresh airstrikes on the Yemeni capital, Sana'a. We are now joined by our correspondent in the city, Abdul Latif Al-Washili, for more on the attack. Abdul Latif, it's good to talk to you. So tell us more about the attack and any reported casualties.
City in Sana'a, there are no casualties reported until the moment, but of course, the houses around the target, the cars, and there will be, of course, there will be damages to the houses and the cars in there. Saudi Arabia has been escalating its attacks on civilians on the residential areas in the capital city in Sana'a. They are pushing the Yemeni army to keep pressing ahead, to keep attacking the Saudi facilities. The Saudi warplanes have launched yesterday two airstrikes on Al-Nahdain area. They have been almost launching airstrikes every day during the past months, and this will absolutely push the Yemeni army to respond to the Saudi attacks. It is the right of the Yemeni army to respond to the Saudi attacks, as Yemenis are depending on the army to push and to force the kingdom to stop these attacks against civilians. Most of the casualties of these attacks are only children and women. They are killing the Yemeni people for the seventh year. So I believe that the Yemeni army will be responding in the few coming days to the Saudi attacks and will be pushing the Saudi regime to stop its attacks on civilians.
Abdul Latif, well, there is this thing. Saudi Arabia's words are at odds with its actions. You know, they claim that we want to make peace, but at the same time, they increase the number of airstrikes that they carry out. And as you said, they're almost on a daily basis carrying out airstrikes now on Yemen. And the situation on the ground actually, because sometimes Saudi Arabia, actually most of the time, it claims that we target and hit military bases in Yemen. However, what happens on the ground proves the exact opposite. Civilians are losing their lives. In fact, since Saudi Arabia launched the devastating war on Yemen in 2015, hundreds of thousands of civilians have lost their lives, including women and children, as you just said. And according to official reports, the humanitarian crisis and situation in Yemen is the worst of its kind in the world currently. So what do you think about this? How do you justify all this? All the claims made by Saudi Arabia, is it justifiable by any means?
They are using the media outlets to justify the war and to make it look like it's legal against the Yemeni people, but it's not. They are targeting civilians, they are killing civilians, they are imposing a siege on the country for seventh year now. They are killing only the civilians and pushing the country to the brink of famine each day. They have come to realize that they have lost this war, so they are just keep pushing the civilians to the brink of famine. They are just keep worsening the humanitarian crisis in the country. Hundreds of thousands of children, they are suffering from acute malnutrition, and they need urgent assistance. If they didn't get this assistance, maybe they will die due to the continued war imposed on the country and the siege imposed by the Saudi regime. They have come to realize that they have lost this war. They have lost billions of dollars on this war. They thought that they will end it in a few weeks, as they have stated in the beginning of the war. But the Yemeni army is now taking the most of the cities in the north. The last one is Marib. If the Yemeni army managed to take control of the city, and I believe they will in a few weeks, they are a few kilometers away from the city. If they took control of the city, then they will be controlling all the north of Yemen.
Hopefully, and inshallah, that will happen. I've been talking to Abdul Latif Al-Washili, our correspondent in Sana'a. Abdul Latif, have a nice day. Thank you for joining us. Moving on, tensions simmer over Russia's troop buildup near its borders with Ukraine. NATO has warned Moscow it will respond to any use of force against the country.
It is also clear that if Russia uses force against Ukraine, that will have costs, that will have consequences, and therefore we continue to call on Russia to de-escalate.
The comments by Stoltenberg echo those coming from Washington. The U.S. has called the military buildup unusual, warning all options are on the table to counter Russia. The U.S., NATO, and Ukraine have raised the alarm over Moscow's military movements, claiming it is planning to attack Ukraine. Russia, however, dismisses the allegations. It says the increased military activity near borders with Ukraine is defensive. Russia says steps are in response to the growing NATO presence near its borders. Political commentator William Jones earlier told us that there are real concerns in Russia about the increasing presence of NATO forces near its borders.
I don't think they're very provocative with regard to that, even though they're concerned about the situation in Ukraine. But, of course, what you've had now is considerable movement by the United States and the NATO forces, both to strengthen so-called training of Ukrainian forces, movement into the Black Sea, flights over very close to the Russian border. All of this has increased over the past few weeks and past few months. And obviously, Russia is extremely concerned because that type of presence of the NATO alliance had never been as close as it is now. So it's not strange that they would do that at this point. And I think it is a defensive measure that they're taking. I think also they do want to send a signal to the forces in the West who are really pushing this issue that they would be prepared to meet any threat that would come their way. So I think there's a signal being sent here, but also defensive measures being taken. And I'm very skeptical that this means any kind of military action on the part of the Russians come January.
The World Health Organization says the new COVID-19 strain discovered in South Africa is a variant of concern.
So Omicron B11529 is named as a variant of concern because it has some concerning properties. This variant has a large number of mutations, and some of these mutations have some worrying characteristics. Right now, there are many studies that are underway. There's a lot of work that is ongoing in South Africa and in other countries to better characterize the variant itself in terms of transmissibility, in terms of severity, and any impact on our countermeasures like the use of diagnostics, therapeutics, or vaccines.
The official said that the WHO is closely monitoring the new variant it has dubbed Omicron. She called for adherence to social distancing and wearing masks to minimize possible exposure to the virus as scientists study its severity and transmissibility. Meanwhile, countries around the world are taking extra measures to curb the spread of the new strain. On Friday, the European Union's health agency said the new strain poses a high to very high level of risk to the bloc, urging travel restrictions. The U.S., Canada, Iran, and several other countries have also closed their borders to countries in southern Africa. Infectious diseases specialist Gloria Taliani says the new COVID variant has raised concerns around the world due to properties that make it highly contagious. Here's more.
The variant of concern are observed very closely by WHO and other countries because they may represent really a danger for spreading of the virus and infecting many peoples without having has any real effective tool to contrast it. The reasons are mainly based on the mutations that are observed in the sequence of the virus that confer resistance to the presently employed vaccines. But the other characteristic that we are not really convinced of about this variant is the capability of spreading very efficiently all over the world. And in this case, the combination of the two characteristics would confer to the virus, to the new variant, a very dangerous characteristic itself and will determine an alarm that really sets people being concerned.
One of the world's largest archaeological tourism sector events has concluded in Paestum, Italy. Representatives of the Palmyra World Heritage Site, freed from Daesh terrorists by Syrian forces in 2016, also attended the initiative. Max Civelli has more.
The 23rd Mediterranean Exchange of Archaeological Tourism has wrapped up in Paestum, a site in central southern Italy recognized by UNESCO as part of the World Cultural Heritage. The three-day initiative aimed to promote sites and destinations of great archaeological value and increase business opportunities. Some 100 conferences and meetings took place during the international event that has seen the participation of more than 150 exhibitors from 15 countries. Syria was among them, with a stand presenting the current state of the Palmyra World Heritage Site in the Homs province after the destruction by Daesh.
In 2015, Daesh militants seized the modern town of Palmyra first and then ancient ruins nearby. The militants initially promised to leave the sites, temples, and columns untouched. However, those promises went on to be unfulfilled.
Daesh attacked Palmyra's archaeological sites with bulldozers and explosives until 2016. The region of Palmyra was then freed from Daesh by a coalition of Syrian-Russian military forces on March 24, 2016. During the Mediterranean Exchange of Archaeological Tourism, an International Archaeological Discovery Award for the most valuable discovery of the year was assigned. The award is named after Khaled al-Assad, the archaeologist of the site of Palmyra who was brutally murdered by Daesh for trying to protect the cultural heritage. Max Civelli, Paestum.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
Basij, manifestation of self-sacrifice and martyrdom. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. We are in the Basij Week. Basij Week reminds us of volunteer forces who selflessly devoted themselves to the lofty ideals of the Islamic Revolution and in full obedience to Imam Khomeini cast fear in the hearts of enemies and ill-wishers. As if the Basij forces have signed their holy covenant with their blood, since they never step back till their last breath. Great martyr Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani had said, "The condition for martyrdom is to be a martyr. No one can become a scholar before acquiring knowledge." He meant that unless one lives like a martyr, he would never deserve to be killed in the way of God. By the way, how can one live the life of a martyr? Let us first understand the meaning of martyrdom in Islam. In Islam, a martyr is specifically a person who starts fighting the enemies and is killed in the way of God. But it has a broader meaning. As the Noble Quran says that those who have faith in God and His Apostle, they are indeed the truthful and martyrs with their Lord. A hadith from Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, reads, "When a seeker of knowledge dies while acquiring it, he passes away a martyr." The Prophet also says, "He who dies with the love of my progeny will die a martyr." According to the Islamic culture, those who march in the path of truth and die while fulfilling their duties, they die as martyrs. Just as reaching the summit of a mountain requires to pass the slopes, achieving martyrdom requires passing through the lower steps. This is what Martyr Soleimani meant. The first phase of servitude of God is to know that everything is from Him, even our soul. The main principle for living a martyr is to have sincerity of intention and deed. A martyr only thinks of fulfilling his duty and pleasing God. Thus, he will never think of richness or poverty. Neither will be worried about victory or defeat. Of course, martyrdom is a stage of wise life. The Noble Quran makes it clear in Surah Al-Imran that martyrs are not dead, but they are living and provided for near their Lord. Defending the oppressed is one of the most important divine duties. Imam Ali, peace upon him, said to his children in the last moments of his life, "Be the enemy of oppressors and helper of the oppressed." The Imam has not limited his word to a specific religion. Defending the oppressed is the core of a struggle in the way of God. Martyr Ayatollah Murtaza Mutahhari says, "War with the aim of employing economic or human forces of a nation is by no means acceptable in Islam. In view of Islam, such wars are a kind of oppression. Jihad can only be legitimate as defense and, in fact, a struggle against aggression. Today, war has found broader dimensions. As for the cultural, economic, or political wars, it is not the geographical borders that are invaded. It is rather the divine borders and the borders of humanity, freedom, and justice that are violated. It is very hard to live a martyr in such soundless wars, as it is too difficult to distinguish an oppressor from an oppressed. A martyr is the one who does not lose the right way, as he has an indicator and guide, that is, the leader and imam who is divinely helped. The Noble Quran says, "O you who have faith, obey Allah and obey the Apostle and those vested with authority among you." He who is the servant of God can be a true basiji and a living martyr. A basiji is a person who gives whatever he has, but he never disobeys the leader. The best role model for basij were the 72 companions of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, who sacrificed their life in the way of the Imam without thinking of the enemy. They never left their role alone. Their absolute obedience of the Imam keeps reverberating in the world for those who seek freedom and humanity. They tell us that the Islamic Ummah will not be the monolithic and firm without the Imam. True Basiji forces are the flag bearers of vigilance. They keep awakening dormant souls in the world to stage uprising against oppressors. The Iranian Basij, the Hezbollah of Lebanon, the Hashd al-Sha'bi of Iraq, the Palestinian Hamas, and other forces in Asia, Africa, and elsewhere are the members of the Wakeful Ummah. They will never tolerate the U.S. hegemony in the world. They have indeed turned into the nightmare to shatter the dreams of the global arrogance and Zionism.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear listeners, and let us contemplate upon what the leader of the pious and the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, has said about the vicissitudes of life. The consequence of fear is disappointment. And the consequence of bashfulness is frustration. Opportunity passes away like the cloud. Therefore, make use of good opportunities.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Leaving Sin. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of leaving sin. Now, this is very important that when we talk about the Islamic lifestyle, in our lifestyle, sin should not have any part in our lifestyle. We should leave it. It should not be the part of our life, because this is a sin that stops us from getting to perfection. Whereas the Islamic lifestyle and Islam has come to take us towards the perfection. Now, one of the biggest hurdles is sin itself. When we see a sin, it stops us from getting to perfection. It stops us from going to the right path, and it stops us from feeding the best thing to our soul, because obviously we have two things. We have a soul and a body. For the body, we have subsistence like, you know, fruits, food, and drinks. These are the things that we give to our body, and this body gets strengthened with this. Whereas on the other side, if I talk about the body first, so these are the foods that we give. On the for the body, there are some things which are not beneficial, basically. And that is, for example, if someone just eats junk food, if a person do not eat properly on time, if he's not eating on time, these are the things that are harmful for his body. Maybe he's eating too fat, and that is also harmful for his body. So we need to be very much careful. When we are very much careful about our body, similarly, we need to be careful about our soul. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the leaving the sins, and we talked about the body. We gave the example of body, that the way we give food to the body, there are something which are beneficial for the body, which help this body to gain or to have the growth, and there are some things which are harmful for the body, which we do not give, or we do not eat or drink such things. Similarly, we have a soul. This soul also needs some sustenance. There are many things that are harmful for the soul, and there are many things that are beneficial for the soul. There are the things that helps the soul to grow quickly and to reach to perfection, and there are many things that stop the soul from getting the perfection, and it is definitely harmful for the soul. Now, the things that are harmful for the soul, one of those things is sin itself. When a person commits a sin, the soul gets angry. Obviously, it weakens the soul. It brings a black dot on the heart of a person. Whereas if a person is performing good deeds, he never goes towards the sin, that person obviously achieves the perfection sooner. And we have many, many supplications in which we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to forgive us. Even at the last sajda or the prostrate that we do, we say, ظَلَمْتُ نَفْسِي, I have done ظُلْم, unjust, I was unjust towards myself. فَغْفِرْ لِي, O Allah, forgive me. Why I was unjust? It was because of the sin that I committed. So the sin itself is injustice. The sin itself is oppression against my body and my soul. The sin itself is oppression. So we need to get rid of these sins, inshallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Spacecraft are used for a range of purposes, from observation to exploration and navigation. But this specific spacecraft was designed for a totally different purpose, to smash into an asteroid. In a first-of-its-kind mission, NASA launched the vehicle, Dot, from a Space Force base in California. The mission will take 10 months to travel to a pair of asteroids. It will eventually crash into one of two rocks and see if it can change its course. Just before impact, DART will deploy a small satellite to take photos of the crash. Space organizations around the world are eager to find ways of countering objects that might head towards the Earth. The good news, though, is that for now, none of those objects are a threat. Old manuscripts are precious and can sometimes fetch attractive sums of money, but this one has gone far beyond, as it's a really rare handwriting belonging to a world-famous scientist. This manuscript was sold for a whopping $13 million at an auction at Christie's in Paris. But would you still be surprised if we told you that it belongs to no one but the great physicist of our time, Albert Einstein? Einstein did not have a habit of keeping drafts, and this is one of only two manuscripts that have survived. Einstein wrote the 54-page document in the early 1900s in Zurich, Switzerland, and his colleague Michel Besseau has preserved it since then. The document contains Einstein's preparatory work for his signature achievement, the theory of general relativity. Einstein's letters have set records twice before, but for much lower prices. November is the best time of the year to see polar bears moving around Canadian shores. During this month, the carnivores gather in large numbers and wait for the waters to freeze before they begin their seal hunt. These bears are playing and wrestling in the Canadian city of Churchill, dubbed the polar bear capital of the world. The area is located within a natural habitat of a large population of polar bears. Sometimes the city's residents even share their streets with these animals. Currently, there are nearly 25,000 polar bears in the wild, and Canada is home to more than 17,000 of them. However, wildlife organizations say these animals are facing the threat of extinction by the end of the century due to global warming. Robots in a war-ravaged city. Androids serve clients in a restaurant in Mosul, an Iraqi city that still bears the scars of the years-long presence of terrorist groups. This fully digital eatery offers a futuristic experience to its customers. From interactive tables to glowing constellations, everything seems like a journey to the future. But the robot waiters are the stars of the show, and the major reason the restaurant attracts a large number of visitors every night.
The idea started during the COVID lockdown. As you know, people spent most of their time on social media during that period, since commuting was not allowed. So we tried to look at different ideas from around the world, and thank God we were able to execute this idea and complete this project.
The owner of the eatery says he has imported the robots, but other technologies used there are the work of a group of young engineers from the University of Mosul. The venue has already become very popular, and many visitors call it their favorite place in the city. Qatar displays a dazzling drone show as it unveils the countdown clock for the 2022 FIFA World Cup in Doha. The clock, in the shape of an hourglass, is located at Doha's iconic Cornish fishing spot. The distinctive design enables the structure to be seen from any angle and stand out from the spectacular city skyline behind it. The event reveals to fans worldwide that just 1 year to go to the big kickoff. Famous athletes including David Beckham and Samuel Eto'o were in attendance at the ceremony. They may not realize it, but they are extremely lucky. Two pandas have been adopted by superstars. Chinese Olympic champion Zhang Jiqi and Paris Saint-Germain footballer Kylian Mbappe have become godparents to a pair of panda cubs. The athletes have both expressed satisfaction with their new role, with Mbappe calling his godparenthood a big moment. The cute cubs are only 3 months old and can barely stand on their own feet. They are called Yuan Dudu and Huan Lili. space lovers have been treated to an epic lunar eclipse that dazzled the night skies of the Northern Hemisphere. The event is also known as the Blood Moon because of the red haze seen around the moon during the eclipse. The 3.5-hour phenomenon gave stargazers the chance to witness the longest partial eclipse in 580 years. Although NASA calls this celestial event a partial eclipse, around 97% of the moon was cast into a red hue by the Earth's shadow. A total eclipse could also be seen in Russia's far eastern regions. The next longest partial eclipse will take place in around 648 years.
An 11-month-old baby has become an internet sensation after a video of her snowboarding went viral in China. Wang Yuji is a daredevil infant snowboarder whose adorable face sticks out underneath all the protective snow and sports gear. Her parents decided to learn skiing during the winter, but they also wanted to include their baby on the fun of snow sports. While snowboarding might be a bit too early for a toddler who can barely stand or walk, Yuji was not scared at all and even enjoyed it. China, which is hosting the Winter Olympics in a couple of months, is encouraging citizens to try ice and snow sports.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Every year, the roads across this tiny island in northwestern Australia turn scarlet just as millions of crabs leave their homes in the depths of the forest and start marching together all the way to the ocean where they can mate and spawn. The spectacular group voyage on Christmas Island happens after the first rainfall in October or November. And in order to give these red creatures the leeway, locals close off multiple roads across the island. They've even built a special bridge for the crabs so that they can cross the road unharmed. The mesmerizing migration is now a tourist attraction, drawing nature lovers from around the globe.
Paleontologists in Brazil have discovered remains that could belong to a species of dinosaur as yet unknown. The fossils were found at a site in northeastern Brazil. A team of scientists is trying to put together the bones and complete the huge dinosaur's skeleton. They think it lived during the Cretaceous period, which began around 145 million years ago and ended with extinction of all dinosaurs roughly 66 million years ago.
A new study shows that moderate consumption of tea and coffee may be better for your health than previously thought. The study conducted by a Chinese medical university says tea and coffee can help keep stroke and dementia at bay. And if you're wondering what is meant by moderate consumption, it's defined as something between 2 and 5 cups of tea and coffee, either alone or combined in one day. The study followed more than 360,000 people aged 50 to 74 for over a decade. Some scientists have praised the study as robust. Others, however, say the participants were all selected from the UK Biobank, which means they're healthier than the general population. Pomegranate has a special place in Iranian culture. There is a trace of the fruit everywhere from poetry to cooking. Iranians even hold a pomegranate festival in the fall. This year the event is held in one of the main parks in the capital, Tehran. The festival features different varieties of pomegranates that are grown across Iran. The visitors can also find pomegranate products, including juices, concentrates, and dressings. The event includes cultural parades, music concerts, and traditional live performances. Iranians say they always welcome the pomegranate season, as it's one of the old symbols in the country's literature and art. The Christmas season always brings happiness and joy to people around the world. Many Parisians these days are taking a respite from the daily routines and hitting famous departmental stores now light up with present boxes. Cheerful families could be spotted at Christmas-decorated galleries, Lafayette and Printemps department stores. Automated figures and colorful window displays are the center of attractions for them and their children. It's a season when people buy Christmas gifts for their loved ones, and stores make big profits this time around. Many Parisians say they want to take advantage of this period, as the government is debating whether or not to impose a COVID-related lockdown. In Venezuela, a large number of musicians are striving for one common goal, and that's setting the Guinness record as the world's largest orchestra. Over 12,000 musicians, mostly children and adolescents, have played together to make that happen. Hundreds of violins, violas, and double basses playing in unison at this setting in Caracas. The musicians are all connected to the country's network of youth orchestras. For them to set a record, over 8,000 instruments had to play at the same time during a 5-minute period of a classical piece. Right now, a Russian orchestra that played the country's national anthem is holding the record. Once done, the crowd of musicians erupted in cheers, lifting their instruments and waving Venezuelan flags. Guinness will announce its decision in the next 10 days. Tourists and residents in Los Angeles have been mesmerized by a dazzling new event the U.S. city is hosting, with holiday-themed and full of colorful lights. Visitors can enjoy a mile-long walkway covered on all sides with brightly lit installations. Artists from around the world have taken part in the exhibition. The centerpiece display is a cathedral tunnel lit with thousands of bulbs. Another amazing attraction is the orbs, lit up with thousands of torches. The event has been a huge hit with the LA public.
Oh my gosh, it's so nice.
And it gets to be out in the open, and it's like a perfect night to do it, so it's great.
It's definitely the best. Like, we had to do, like, in a car to go see lights, and then we got to, like, now, like, go around and actually walk and get to see everything up close, which is super nice.
Yeah.
Definitely after the, year and a half that we've had.
Yeah.
So.
And it's really nice to see everything up close, because it's like, you see in a photo, but then it's more real and real, so.
Yeah.
The event opened to the public on the 12th of November and will run for 5 nights. Preparations for the event, however, started a month ago. The organizers say millions of bulbs and 17 miles of cables are used for the 18 art installations.
From a gray and gloomy look to a cheery and colorful appearance. That's the story of how a neighborhood in Peru's capital, Lima, is being transformed to become a tourist attraction. A group of artists in Lima are bringing color and joy to this hilly neighborhood by painting the walls of houses. Creating an optical illusion of a giant mural, the project is visible from different spots across the city. The designers are hoping what they did can improve the lives of residents in a neighborhood that was considered to be unsafe before.
What we are doing here is communal work with all the neighbors, and we are doing it because it's important to change the environment through the use of colors. This hill was considered an unsafe and dangerous area of the city, so we decided to change that social stigma through art, which, for me as a muralist, is the best tool to achieve it.
The project was started 5 months ago, and workers are now putting the final touches to their work of art. The mural covers over 300,000 square meters. It's the largest in South America.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
In the limelight.
The number of deaths from COVID-19 in the U.S. in 2021 as of November 20th surpassed the deadly toll of 2020. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Juan Cole, writer. This article is titled, COVID Killed More Americans in 2021 than 2020. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. The number of deaths from COVID-19 in the U.S. in 2021 as of November 20th surpassed the deadly toll of 2020. Some 771,013 Americans have died of the novel coronavirus as of this writing, according to Johns Hopkins. The CDC estimates that 385,343 people died of COVID-19 in 2020. After 9/11 attacks, the right wing in the United States insisted on treating it as an act of war. They took Americans into two big conventional wars, followed by nearly two decades of guerrilla warfare, with smaller interventions in several other countries. It cost trillions. It made Americans less safe, not more. It displaced millions of people from their homes in the West Asia, North Africa region. Every 3 days, COVID-19 kills as many people as the 9/11 attacks did. You have to wonder whether all that blood loss really derived from grief over the victims of 9/11, or whether those deaths just authorized an orgy of white wars on brown people. Because if the issue was grief for those killed, then we ought to see the same Republican Party that launched the 20-year war swing into action to make sure that not one American died unnecessarily from a much more fatal terrorism, that of COVID-19. Instead, many Republican governors have forbidden mask mandates and have fought vaccination mandates, routine for other deadly diseases such as polio, in the courts. Many of those 385,343 dead people did not have to die even in 2020 before the vaccines. In places like Hong Kong, where people just masked up, the death toll was minuscule. In mainland China, where some 82% of people masked up, the The death toll for 2020 was on the order of 4,600. Even if this is a gross underestimate, it isn't so much of an underestimate that it would change the galactic disparity with the United States. A just published aggregation of the results of public health studies with over 300,000 participants confirmed that mask wearing cut the incidence of COVID-19 by 53%. It appeared in the BJM, a peer-reviewed medical journal of the Union of the British Medical Association. The authors observed a natural experiment across 200 countries showed 45.7% fewer COVID-19-related mortality in countries where mask-wearing was mandatory. So that means the United States death toll to date could be less than 400,000 instead of nearly 800,000. But only about 48% of Americans masked up before the vaccine in 2020, which is the major reason for which 385,343 of them are 6 feet under. Where this failure to mask indoors was owing to ignorance, you have to be full of pity for the victims of a rapacious and insidious disease. The ignorance of many of the victims was, moreover, connived at by Fox Cable News, which should be the subject of a class action suit by survivors of dead former viewers, and by Republican governors such as Greg Abbott of Texas, Ron DeSantis of Florida, Brian Kemp of Georgia, and Kristi Noem of South Dakota. Likewise, a tiny percentage of people who have been vaccinated die of COVID-19, and those often have serious underlying health conditions that make it difficult for their bodies to produce antibodies even with a vaccination. From mid-January of this year until October 1st, 29,000 Texans were killed by COVID-19. Texas health authorities estimate that only 8% of those were fully vaccinated. Of that 8%, half were over 75, and probably those elderly people had health conditions that made them vulnerable. So if you are under 75 years of age and relatively healthy, you have a vanishingly small chance of dying if you are vaccinated. This is true even though the Delta variant is nearly twice as deadly and 10 times more transmissible than the original Alpha variant. Midstream.
Yemenis wrongfully allied with the U.S.-Saudi aggression in the south now fear a repetition of the Afghanistan scenario in their areas. They are closely watching how during the past week Saudi Arabia has evacuated most of the military camps it occupied in the southern governorates. In parallel, it is now rare to find Emirati forces in many southern regions since the Emirati forces had previously begun a massive evacuation of their own forces after enduring a series of military blows by the Yemeni armed forces. The U.S.-Saudi-UAE coalition of aggression's problem now is no longer about what is happening in Ma'rib. Everyone, without exception, is proceeding as if the city has already fallen. Ma'rib is a done deal, liberated and on the road to recovery. What is actually undergoing these days are negotiations between the Sana'a government and a number of tribes from the people of the Valley District adjacent to Ma'rib from the southeastern side, in addition to the city itself, amid a massive exodus of the